Do you enjoy writing your own stories and designing your own campaigns? Maybe you just like exploring your character's background and world building. Do you want to develop your writing skills, but can't afford the time or money for a creative writing college program? Then the Adventure Writing Academy is just what you need. AWA is an online Skype-based school co-developed by Fantasy Flight Games writer Keith Ryan Kappel. A creative writing program that makes RPG writing a point of emphasis. In addition to a nerd-friendly curriculum, classes are joined by a rotating cast of guest students, each one a working professional in the field, there to help provide the guidance students receive. Last year, AWA featured familiar FFG names like Katrina Ostrander, Tim Cox, and Jason Marker, and RPG industry regulars like Ray Valise and Eric Cagle. And the final class session is a four-hour lecture on the business of RPG writing, game theory, and design by the creator of the narrative dice system himself, industry superstar Jay Little. Improve your writing, collaborate, make connections, learn and grow in a friendly atmosphere of fellow nerds. Interested? Learn more and enroll today at www.adventurewritingacademy.com.
To the RPG Academy podcast. I am Michael, and tonight I'm here flying solo. I had a couple different possible co-hosts, and all of them have fallen through, unfortunately. But we're going to get them on in future shows. It's just, it's not a no, it's just not a not now, I guess. So I thought, rather than canceling, because tonight is technically the first show that I'm back from my hiatus, though actually isn't, but it's supposed to be our first new show of 2019, and didn't want to cancel completely, so I thought what I would do is a synergy session, which is something we haven't done here in quite a while, something I really enjoy doing and happy to get back to it. So for anyone who is new or just not remembering or missed those episodes, a synergy session is the name that we came up with when we will take a pack of Magic the Gathering cards, which I have a pack right here, and open them up and kind of in real time, go through them and see if we can create a campaign, an adventure, a one-shot, a sidetrack, something out of those cards, and use those in a way to inspire us to write something that couldn't possibly be playable in the future. If anyone does end up joining me in chat, happy to have you play along, give some suggestions for how you would use the cards, either to enhance what I'm doing or alternate takes. And as always, if anyone's listening, please let me know how I sound tonight. I'm trying again another sort of newer setup, first time I've done this without having any other person on locally or remotely. So I have no idea how I sound in relation to no one else. Also, I hope you can't hear the kids and the wife upstairs. They're getting a little hot and heavy right now. Kids apparently aren't listening. Bedtime. We'll see how that goes. But before we get into the show proper, one thing I do want to do is let you know about a new sponsor. When this episode goes out audio only, they will have an advertisement attached. And it's the Adventure Writing Academy. Tomorrow night, Tom is going to be doing an interview with the co-founder and one of the faculty of that Adventure Writing Academy, Keith Kappel, I believe. And basically, it's a fiction writing course that specializes in writing for RPGs. And a lot of their faculty come from the world of role-playing games. Keith himself has written recently for Fantasy Flight Games. One of their faculty last year was Katrina Ostrander, who was a guest at Akatacon and also writes or has written in the past for FFG. So they have a classes are starting. I think technically they're getting ready to start, but they have a couple spots open for this semester or this course. I honestly don't know exactly how that part works. But if you're interested, if you just go to adventurewritingacademy.com, there will be links in the show notes when this goes out. Again, there'll be an actual ad attached to this episode when it goes out. Check them out. It sounds really cool. It is, I'm not going to say it's expensive for what you get, but it's, you know, it costs some money. So if this is something you're interested in and you have the resources and the time to commit, sounds like something that would be very cool to do. And obviously, we'll have an interview with the co-founder soon where you can get all of those details. So with that, let's get into the show, and let's say hello to New York Tater, who has joined us. Hello, sir. Always a pleasure to have you. Looks like we have a few extra people also watching. Maybe they haven't checked in yet, or maybe they're just lurkers. If so, totally cool. Welcome to the show. We're going to get started with a synergy session, so I'm going to open a pack of Magic the Gathering cards. I bought a handful, not like a box, but I bought a handful of these 2015 sort of the general core set packs. Because the last couple of times that we've done these, I found that having the more specific geared genre type cards often influenced the type of adventure that would be created. You know, they are themed. The Magic the Gathering cards are themed, so it makes sense that the adventure would kind of be lured that way. So having more of a generic set of cards seems to have been a good idea. At least it works the last couple of times. So that's what we're doing. These again, these are just the core 25 set. So we're going to open them up and we'll go through the cards one at a time, basically, and see what we come up with. And it's been a while since I've cracked a pack. I'm out of practice. All right. And then same as I used to with my my addiction to Magic the Gathering, I like to go through them in order, save the mystery of the rare for last. So our first card here is the Sun Grace Pegasus. I'll do my best to show the cards here. Oh, the camera's not going to do a very good job. So when I put this out, I might go back in and edit on YouTube, but let's be honest, I probably won't. And the idea of the card is they can inspire us in any way. It can be the name of the card, the artwork on the card, the mechanical abilities that that creature that card has, or even the fluff. So so I'm going to read that, so bear with me. So the Sun Grace Pegasus is a creature. It has flying, which means that in the game that it can't be blocked unless the creature also has, the blocking creature has flying or some ability. It also has lifelink, and this is an ability that when this creature does damage, it actually heals the player, quote-unquote landwalker, or planeswalker, not landwalker, that's different, by that many points of damage. And the fluff text here is, the sacred feathers of the Pegasus are said to have healing powers. So I think that lifelink, man, I cannot talk tonight, is the most interesting thing. So certainly we could have a hero that rides a Pegasus. There could be a Pegasus that is part of the adventure to find. Maybe one's been injured and they find that it's injured. But my initial thought is I really like that idea that it's the feather is found. You know, maybe in the world that we're going to be playing this in, Pegasi are not very common. So finding a Pegasus feather, rare, powerful thing. So my first inclination is a rumor gets to our characters of some sort of magical healing, some like a hedge wizard or a witch or a hag or just some sort of outsider in a small remote place starts healing people, and word is started to spread that this is happening, so people are now traveling there in an effort to be healed. Our characters, you know, maybe they have a reason, a loved one, family member, someone in the groups that they are part of that needs healing. They decide to go there as well. And my inclination is that by the time they get there, something has happened. The feather has been stolen by another party. The person who's using it has now started to charge exorbitant amounts of money. It has ran out of juice. And now you have all these sick, ill people that have gathered together and can't go anywhere. But we're going to see what the rest of the cards tell us first. But that's where I'm thinking we might be going. All right, so our next card is a blue card called the Aeronaut Tinkerer. Yeah, it's not going to do very well on the camera, I'm sorry. The Aeronaut Tinkerer is a creature, human artificer. The Aeronaut Tinker has flying, so again, cannot... actually, it says it has flying as long as you control an artifact. So an artifact is a type of card that exists in the game, which means if it has an artifact, it can fly. All Tinkers have their heads in the clouds. I don't intend to stop there. So what I'm thinking now is I'm still going to stick with the idea that the feather has been taken, but it's been taken by someone who isn't trying to corrupt it to abuse it, but they want to try to figure out how it works. And it's more maybe it was like a borrow, but the person who had it didn't really want to play along. So then the person borrowed it without asking, with the intent of returning it, but trying to find a way to harness that power, you know, some sort of mechanical, artificial means to either enhance it, make it better, duplicate it, or replicate it in some way. So we've got an NPC that the players will have to track down. They're not necessarily a bad guy. They're not someone they're going to hopefully kill, but you know, they're trying to do the right things for the wrong reasons, or the wrong things for the right reasons, I should say. So it'd be more of a, you know, negotiation. Can we get them to comply now without hurting them or damaging the feather? All right. Not trying to you know, throw up any smoke screens, but one of the rules we live by too here is that we don't have to use every card. If there's a card that just doesn't work or doesn't make sense, totally okay to just ignore it. But the next card here is a sorcery card. It's a red. Clear a path. Destroy target creature with Defender. And again, Defender is a type of card, or is an attribute that cards can have that generally means that they can only defend, or they have better uses at Defender. So the artwork shows two guards dead and a doorway that has been busted down. So something has cleared a path through them. So I think this here, my thought is that we are going to introduce an actual bad guy, bad girl, bad thing to the game. That there's another entity that also has their desires to have this feather. My first thought is almost like the Doomsday from the old Superman book cartoon comic book, where, and again, I know I'm sure it's changed in the canon, but when I read The Death of Superman a long time ago, Doomsday was in some sort of underground bunker and was breaking out. That's how the story started. Was, you know, Doomsday was just punching it over and over again, breaking free. So perhaps there's this entity, this being, this thing that has been trapped for a very long time, perhaps resting more than trapped. And the idea that there's a Pegasus feather out there is what this thing needs. I guess what I'm thinking is almost like a Voldemort situation, where it's trapped in this form. It needs to be healed. You know, my mind is like when Voldemort sucked the blood out of the unicorn in the Dark Forest. So this thing, this creature, this entity needs this feather to heal themselves, to restore themselves, and they are willing to go through anyone and anything to get it. So it's a race at this point, and the players aren't aware of that, and even the person who has the feather currently isn't aware of it. But there's this other thing that's also after them that won't be so nice when it shows up wanting the feather. All right, so the next card here is a Raise the Alarm. This is a white card. It's an instant, and it allows you to put 2/1/1 white soldier tokens onto the battlefield. The fluff text here is like blinking or breathing, responding to an alarm is an involuntary reflex. And the artwork shows two soldiers, a male and a female, rushing, swords out, ready to defend or to attack. So this makes me think that, so I don't want to get too complicated, though I normally do, so I don't know why I would be afraid of that. That whoever or whomever was guarding this entity that's now free, or was aware of it, or maybe became aware of it when it broke free and killed some people, they need to get alarm raised, let people know that, hey, this evil thing is back in the world. So now we have a fourth faction that is involved. So you have the person took the feather with good intentions, PCs who are chasing them, bad thing that's trying to chase them to get it to for its own nefarious purposes, and then you have the people who were in charge of guarding the thing that are also chasing it. Their goal is to capture the thing. They know how it works. They know best how to recapture it or take it, you know, back under control. They know that it's after the feather as well, so maybe their thought is, like, you know, come off at the pass. If they can get the feather, then they can lead it back to where they want to entrap it again. Possibly maybe getting too complicated there, but I like it. I like the idea. I like the hey, we've caught you, but we don't want to hurt you. We need to talk about it. Oh, no, this other thing has shown up now, and it's going to kill everybody. Oh, here's this other force that's shown up that doesn't want to kill anybody, but is willing to kill us if it will lead to them capturing this thing that's really bad. So you could have these different encounters that are half combat, some role play, all combat, with the goal ultimately in my head, if this was a book I was writing or a TV show, that we would all work together. We would, you know, take the feather back to the place where the creature was before, or a similarly warded, protected place, retrap that entity, and then, you know, get the feather back from those folks. Maybe we even loan it to the person who originally stole it to give them a chance to do their thing, and then return it back to the village or to the person who had it originally and start healing people once again. All right, so our next card here is a Satyr Wayfinder. It's a green creature card. And a satyr basically is like a bestial creature from mythology. It's like a half goat, I think, and half human with goat horns. When the Satyr Wayfinder enters the battlefield, reveal the top four cards of your library. You may put a land card from among them into your hand, put the rest into your graveyard. And the fluff text here is the first satyr to wake after a reveal must search for the site of the next one. Revel, I think, not reveal. Yes, let me read that again. The first satyr to wake from a revel must search for the site of the next one. So basically they had like an all-nighter, they had a kegger, and the first doofus who actually wakes up after partying all night, their job is to go out and find the place for the next party. So the Wayfinder gives me an idea of there's a hidden land, and it's certainly possible that this entity that's broken free was from a place that is other, that, you know, almost like maybe like a dimensional shift where there's a door there. When I open it, it goes into a wardrobe, perhaps. If someone else goes through it, maybe it goes into an entire another world. Like, oh, I don't know, Narnia, perhaps. So perhaps this evil entity is from that other place. And so we need a wayfinder to work with us to get them back to where they were from. So I'm going to combine this card with those the soldiers that raise the alarm, that the people who are coming to help to take the feather in order to entrap the entity are from an other place, again, quote unquote Narnia, that only they can travel to. And I'm also getting kind of a vibe from The Magicians, the TV show, which I love. Of course, that is heavily influenced by Narnia, so that should be circling logic here. All right, moving on. We're almost through our commons. All right. And our next card here is a Cursed Spirit. It's a creature card. I love The Magicians too. Really freaking love that show. Didn't it first? First two or three episodes, I was a little bit like, because I'm really not a huge fan of the main character. At least I wasn't, because everyone else was more interesting than him. But once you get Quentin, you love the dude. He's just so good, but doofusly as well. But yeah, I absolutely love that show and cannot wait for the season to come back, which should be early this year. All right, so again, this is a black card. It's a cursed spirit. It's a creature. Intimidate, which means this creature can't be blocked except by artifact creatures or creatures that share the same color. Again, Magic the Gathering, meaning black cards. Many have heard the slither of dragging armor and the soft squelch of its voice, but only its victims ever meet its icy gaze. The image here is a sort of a swamp, you know, never-ending swamp sort of thing, and there's almost like a ghostly visage coming out of it. I'll try to show it to the camera, but I don't think it's doing a very good job. It's hard to see at first as well, but this figure here, the blue and green, is like a sort of like a humanoid rising from the swamp, like a ghost. I think that's our entity. That's who we're after. It's broken free. It's an accursed spirit. Again, it fits really much in with Voldemort, that they are after something to give them renewed vigor in life, maybe even to break the curse. You know, we could even go full triple double axle helix, good guy turned bad guy, might turn back to good guy if we help him situation. Alrighty. So our next card is a green enchantment. It's Vine Weft. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. It's an enchantment aura. Enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +1/+1, which means they're harder to attack, harder to damage. And you can return it from your graveyard to your hand. And in the image, it has what looks to be like an elf character who's being attacked by vines. Think of like choking vines, assassin vines. So I'm thinking this might be one of the attacks that our accursed entity has available, that when they get into the to combat, they're going to cause the flora, that's the one, to rise up around wherever they're at and attack the creatures. And it doesn't have to be just vines, but obviously it can be poison ivy from Batman situation. But once they're dead, they sort of revive, almost like a zombie situation where they die, they gray out, much like Vision at the end of Infinity War, spoilers. But they come back, probable spoilers for Endgame, and can attack again, but they only have like maybe one more hit left kind of situation. All right, our next card is a creature, and it's a Necromancer's Assistant. So when Necromancer's Assistant enters the battlefield, put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard. And our flavor text, zombies and necromancers agree, easy access to brains is preferred. So I think this is just probably goes along with our accursed. Maybe it's not even just a single entity. Maybe it's almost like a cult. Of followers who have been trying to release this Cthulhu-like being into our world. Once it's free, they want to rush to and try to assist it. This would give us a chance to have some combat that isn't just against the big bad, that isn't just the final boss, but these, zombie-like necromantic cultists that we have to fight along the way. Certainly possible, too, that, again, this gives us a way to get some plot introduced where maybe we learn where it came from, what happened to it, why it is what it is, what it wants, in case maybe the Pegasus feather isn't going to work. Maybe it's a MacGuffin that fails, but we've learned through encountering these assistants, these cultists, of what the creature really wants or is after, and can use that. The first thing I'm thinking of is it's almost like it's a positive energy beacon. That's what it's been drawn to. So you have the chance for a heroic sacrifice where the feather isn't actually what they're after, though we think it is. So one of the, maybe it's like a holy paladin, puts themselves up as bait to draw the creature in, possibly even entrapping themselves forever or, you know, till next time, in that realm with it, possibly to become accursed as well, or maybe even absorb the curse so that the other creature goes free. There's a lot of things we could do with that. All right, so our next card is an instant. It's a black called Necrobite. And the image is like a man soldier holding an axe. And there's some sort of like, it's like a snake, but it's just the skeleton writhing its way up the handle of the axe and then biting the guy on the arm. And there's like sort of an acid burn where it bit. There we go, that's a little bit better. Target creature gains death touch until end of turn, regenerated. So death touch is an ability in the game where if this creature does any sort of damage at all to something, that thing dies, unless there's some other way that it doesn't. But for the most part, it dies. So it's certainly possible that the cultists, these others that are helping our entity, carry weapons that are like that. I really like the idea, kind of combine a couple things like Conan, where maybe they shoot arrows. That's one of their attacks, crossbow bolts, arrows. And when they hit, they transform into serpents, whether real or, you know, phantasmal or necromantic, which also bite. Don't want to kill all the characters at one hit, one kill, but I like that imagery of the arrow hitting and then also becoming a creature that has to be dealt with. Misses then become important as well, because if it misses but it hits like a tree behind you, we could you know, lash out from behind, crawl up your leg, that kind of thing. And I just really like the idea of creatures coming out of weapons. But we also could go thinking like Bane from Batman in a weird way, where maybe these cultists are fighting with weapons, and if they are about to die, or maybe when they become bloodied, if you want to use that terminology for addition, or some other trigger, there's venom within their own weapon that bites them, which is going to kill them, but they have like three rounds of just extra damage. I'm also thinking of Thor the Dark World, which is like the worst Marvel movie. But they have those, the Dark Elves do that. They do a thing to themselves. I can't remember the name of them right now, where it makes them super powerful, but they're going to die shortly. There's like a really hard clock on that. But that could be very interesting, where it seems like these are, you know, chumps or just nobodies. And then as they get close to dying, now they turn into Incredible Hulks, and you have to, you know, last three rounds with them doing triple damage and crazy armor class. Or if you just outrun them for three rounds, then they'll die. I think I like that, actually. I think I would go with that one. Or both, because why not? Alrighty. So now we are on to the Forge Devil. It's a red card. It's a creature. It's also a devil. When Forge Devil enters the battlefield, it deals one damage to target creature and one damage to you. So this is a situation where you use the thing and you become hurt. I think I'm just going to tie that into the last thing, where you use the thing and it hurts you. Tie that into the weapons, that when they activate this ability, it kills them, gives them a short amount of time to do a lot of damage. I don't think I want to add any further complications in just yet. Alrighty. Now we're into our uncommons against anyone who might be a little bit unfamiliar with Magic the Gathering. And I haven't played seriously in very many years. I'm sure things have changed. But for the most part, when you open a pack of cards, there's a set number of common cards. These are the ones that, you know, the high frequency rate. Then you have, I think, three uncommon, which are less likely. And then you have your rares, which are your most uncommon. In some cases, you might have a legendary. Haven't checked yet, so maybe we have one. But generally, they're a little bit more powerful, more versatile. So our first uncommon card is a Johnny's Pride Mate. And it's a soldier. It's like a, I guess Tabaxi would be the D&D term. It's like a cat person. They're not truly that. These look to be tigers. But actually, I don't know. Tabaxi might be tigers. I don't know. But they're a cat soldier. Whenever you gain life, you may put a +1/+1 counter on a Johnny's Pride Mate. So what I'm thinking here is this is from the group, organization, whatever, that the Pegasus actually came from. And maybe they are coming after the feather because it's theirs, or maybe the Pegasus needs it, or maybe something happened to the Pegasus that caused it to lose a feather, and they're trying to figure out what happened to deal with that. Again, that may be adding too many complications at that point, because now we've got a fourth fifth unrelated entity who could be antagonistic to our characters. But maybe, you know, it could also be something that, like, almost like when you think you've solved it, like if we've locked our entity back into the other realm, oh, now we have this other thing that has shown up. We're not quite done yet. It's also a complication. So I'm leaning towards not doing that. But I'm not, if this was me, Michael, running this game, I would just kind of play it by ear. How's the table feeling? Do I think they would enjoy a third, another twist? Aha, it's not over yet. If so, then yeah. And it could even, doesn't have to be like a combat encounter. It could just be a role play social encounter where they show up and they just ask questions. You know, what happened? Why did you have it? Oh, wow, we're so glad you were able to use it to do what you did, because you did this great thing. Do you know why the Pegasus lost it originally? Nope. Have you seen the Pegasus? Nope. Okay, well, we're going to go look for it. But it's still an introduction to this new culture. You know, again, maybe there are no these types of creatures known. Now they're here. And it's been a cool and interesting introduction to characters that aren't to be, in, you know, other than just interacted with, not to be fought or anything. So I think I like that better than the combat action. But again, play by ear. If the table's itching for a fight, then they're going to roll initiative and see what happens. All right. Session 0. Take a drink. Alrighty. So our next uncommon is a blue card. It's an instant spell called Dissipate. And the artwork shows a cat-like creature that looks to be sort of fading away, skin first. It's just like all musculature that's visible, and it looks like it's probably going to eventually completely dissolve. You're countering target spell. If that spell is countered this way, exile it instead of putting it in your graveyard. And mechanically, it just means if I counter your spell, normally that card goes into your graveyard, which can possibly be recycled in this version. It actually goes out of the game. It cannot come back in. So we got this thing, Dissipate. I don't think I want to use it as a counter spell, but what's coming to my mind is this is almost like an aura that this entity emanates, that as it moves about our world now, we'll call it the prime material plane, just its presence here is causing death and decay of everything around it. So that could be a way that it is encountered or found or tracked, or just, you know, oh, we know it's coming because we can literally see the circle of death encroaching on us. So yeah, I think I like that better. And it's also, again, if they need to track it down, they can just follow the trail of desiccated creatures and people and things like that. Alrighty. So our next card here is a green sorcery. It's an 8-1 green, which, if you know anything, that's a costly spell. Feral Incarnation. Sorcery, convoke. Your creatures can help cast the spell. Each creature you tap while casting the spell pays for one of that mana or that creature's color. And this is just a way that you can, rather than tap land for resources, you can tap your creatures to help pay for stuff. Put three green beast creature tokens onto the battlefield. So the artwork here, it shows, it kind of looks sort of like a dragon, but it's just a dragon with two heads and necks, and one is sort of coming out of the other. So I guess kind of what I'm seeing here would be maybe when you're fighting our big bad, the entity, that at some point it breaks itself into multiple pieces, almost like Hydra-like, even though it's a humanoid-ish in that image we used earlier, that its sort of power is when it gets close to being dead, again, bloodied if you use that terminology, that it actually, it does look like there's three heads now. It's hard to see, but which makes sense because it said three tokens. So yeah, so maybe it splits itself into three, or it gets multiple attacks. It goes from having one attack to three in some way, just to make it harder. Because that's something I actually really liked from 4th edition. Again, I'm one of those people that I didn't hate it, thought it was okay. The more I played it, the less I liked it, but I still think it did some really cool things. And Bloodied was one of those. I liked the fact that creatures would change, some of them, at a bloody condition. Some, you know, would have like a thing where everyone get attacked, like an aura attack, and they get more damage or armor class go up or down. So I like the idea, like maybe halfway through the battle with the big bad, it changes in some way, becomes more difficult, and sort of changes your strategy. Alrighty, here we go. Here is our rare card. It is a blue squid horror creature, the Chasm Skulker. Whenever you draw this card, put a +1/+1 counter on Chasm Skulker. I assume this means you have to already have one out and draw another one. When Chasm Skulker dies, put X-1/1 blue squid creature tokens with Island Walk onto the battlefield, where X is the number of +1/+1 counters on Chasm Skulker. All right, I'm not seeing anything with this card. It's kind of a cool looking creature. It's got an interesting power. Basically, it explodes and squid babies come out of it. So you can power it up in multiple ways to get more and more of these counters on it. And then when it explodes, blah, blah, blah. So the thing that's coming to my mind would be that even after we've defeated our big bad, hopefully, that there's remnants of it left in our world that can potentially, almost like a troll, regenerate and grow into their own. And it's like the, you know, the last scene of that horror movie where they think that they've gotten all of the slugs or all of the vines or whatever, all of the zombies, and then there's like almost like a post-credit scene or mid-credit scene where there's one of them still out there. You know, there's the eye that opens up or the hand that wiggles. And it's just sort of a to be continued. If the players enjoyed this game, I envision it as a one-shot. That could be the part two. It's like, oh, you thought you succeeded. In fact, now there's more of these creatures. Oh, gremlins make a good example. That you now have to deal with in addition to what you've already done. Or this could, you know, this could be two levels above Big Bad, that now that the entity has been released, it sets a chain of events in motion. It's completely separate to the entity, but it, this creature is now released into our world because of that. And that's just, again, the part two. All right. And our land is a mountain. Pretty much we've been dealing with forests and swamps, so I don't know that we need to work the mountain in, but certainly maybe that's where we have to get, maybe that's where we have to return the feather. We decided to do that. The Pegasus lives on a mountaintop. Or maybe, again, this is where the entity is hidden inside of a mountain. Once you're inside of it, you're in the other place, but that's where you go through. Short Mania mentioned the Stranger Things too. Yeah, they thought they killed the monster, but then they actually realize that the gate was left open. That could certainly work as well, that we've taken care of one problem. Unknowingly, there's another larger, bigger, badder problem that is now going to take advantage of our of this opportunity to come into our world. And again, that's Stranger Things part two or three, whatever it is. Oh, very good. New York Trader mentions that the mountaintop is where the Tinkerer has their hidden workshop. So the mountain is where we're going, racing to get there before the entity does, the people chasing the entity, that kind of thing. So we're all kind of merging there, and always lots of cool chances for mine dungeons or mountain climbing, flying creatures, falling encounter top things. They can obviously have a lot of fun when it comes to mountains. And I just recently watched Lord of the Rings again, so Mordor, top of mind. But there you go. That is a synergy session. So if you've never experienced one before, hopefully you enjoyed it. The idea is whenever you're stuck for inspiration, just grab a pack of Magic the Gathering cards, open them up, and see what comes to you. I can certainly see that being a fun one-shot, maybe even like a three-shot if I'm being honest, because there's a lot of complexity there that would take a little while to play out. But yeah, I could see rolling up some probably like fourth level characters, having some fun with that. Maybe, you know, six by the time we get to the end, and seeing where it goes from there. So if anyone who was listening now or in the future has any other ideas for those same cards, maybe different ways that you would have used them, different avenues or conclusions, feel free to let me know. Put them in the comments of the episode on the YouTube page or in the website when this goes audio only, or hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, that kind of thing. And as always, I appreciate the couple of you that have been hanging out with me tonight. Got a few minutes left, so we can just chat a little bit if you would like to. Yes, I will try to find a way to put a Jenga tower in there in some way or another, because that's what I do. But yeah, let's just chat a little bit. If there's anybody in chat, Shortman, Ian, New York Tater, if you have any questions, any comments, anything you want to chat about, any movies, we can do that for a little while. Otherwise, I'll wrap up. I got a couple things going on. I actually missed work today. If you saw on Twitter, I was not feeling good yesterday. Called off today, but I wasn't going to cancel this, damn it, because I just didn't want to. So top 2018 moments of reality of the world. Is there a movie? I've seen Into the Spider-Verse three times. I almost saw it fourth. I went to the theater, and then I'm like, no, I don't want to watch it. I mean, I do want to watch it again. And so I watched Bumblebee instead, and that was a huge mistake. I've heard that Bumblebee was actually good. Those people are liars. It is not good. It's not bad. It's not the garbage that the Transformer movies have turned into, I still believe that the first Transformer Michael Bay movie's pretty good. The rest of them are hot garbage, though I honestly haven't seen like the last three, so I can't be 100% truthful about that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. It was okay. It had some moments, but it was like, oh my God, it was like script writing 101. There's almost nothing about it that was out of, you know, it's like, okay, now this is when that happens, and now this is when that happens. I would have preferred after the fact to have seen Spider-Verse for the fourth time. I probably won't go to the theater again, but I will buy that movie the moment it's available, whether it's digital or Blu-ray, whatever, and watch it multiple times at home, and probably certain scenes. So Bumblebee starts on again, spoilers for Bumblebee, 3, 2, 1, spoilers. It starts on Cybertron with the war going poorly for the Autobots, and Bumblebee talks. It's a fairly short scene. They are evacuating Cybertron because they've lost the war. They're looking for a refuge planet, a refugee planet they could regroup on. And they're sending different people to different places. Bumblebee gets picked to go to Earth. When he arrives, he was followed by some Decepticons. He gets into a big fight. They try to get him to talk. And he's like, I'll never talk. And so they say, well, we'll make that permanent or whatever. And they stab him in the throat. They were going to kill him anyway, so it really didn't make any sense. He ends up winning. But yeah, so from like 10 minutes into the movie, he can talk, then he can't anymore. And then from then on, they do the radio thing. But they don't even start with the radio thing. You learn about the radio thing in the movie. Starts off, he has a radio, can't talk. Later, he learns to use the radio to talk. So there you go. Dun, dun, dun. So have any of you been listening to any of the Patreon-only content that we've been releasing? The minisodes from Tom, Brad did one, I've done one, I released one of our old movie review podcasts, we saw it twice, I released our Ghostbusters episode, and today I actually re-edited Serenity, which was one of, if not my favorite episode of that show we ever did. But the first time we released it, the audio was just unlistenable. It was awful. And I kind of sounded pretty good today. So I'm probably going to end up releasing that one as well. Oh, sorry, Shortman Ian. Sorry, I did think you were. But yeah, Tom is doing a mini-sode every week about comic books. He's a huge comic book reader. And his most recent was his top 10 list for 2018, his top comics for the year. Usually each week he just talks about what he's read that week or what he's reading, what he's excited about. Brad's first one was, he's going to be talking a lot about Star Wars. He's a big Star Wars fan. Obviously his Twitter handle is Force and Destiny. And he's going to be running a home Star Wars game and just be talking about all that kind of stuff. It may dip into movie stuff as well. And then today I released the first episode from the Dragon Spine project that we've been working on. Just to get some feedback, some ideas on what people are thinking. I got a couple other things I'm working on that will be coming out soon. But at this point, I'm almost starting to wonder if we might be releasing too much patron-only stuff because we're hitting a lot, which makes me so happy. I was afraid, like so many other things we've done, it would just, you know, die. But right now, it's going really well. Tom's doing at least one every week. I've averaged one a week, but I think I did like one, skipped one, and then did two. Brad's now done one, and we have a couple more things, other people that are working on it. Tom did his first one-sheet adventure. Rocky is doing the second one. I don't know where he's at yet, but it should be done this month at some point. But that's something we're going to try to do every month as well, as provide a one-shot, which my first one may not actually be an adventure. Like, I'm probably going to release the Scooby-Doo Dread is my first one, which isn't a one-shot. It's a Dread adventure, but it's going to be pretty short. And then I have a couple ideas that they're more for, I don't even know how you explain it. It's just like a scene or like a setting, like a scenario where this is where something interesting could happen, but I'm not necessarily providing the interesting part, just the an interesting place, I guess. So I got a couple of things I'm working on. We're going to try to get out there. So John Gabriel opened the starter set. Didn't quite get it. I don't think he understands exactly. There's a bit of a disconnect between that game and what the game he plays. Because we called the game he plays the Wizard Brother game. I mentioned this before because him and his brother Jacob both chose to be wizards, which melted my heart because, of course, they want to be wizards. It's the best class. And they are brothers in the game. So they always say, we want to play the Wizard Brother game. That, to them, that is D&D. And they opened the box and I think it was too much. It was too complicated. The rule books and that kind of thing. So I'm going to work with him and slowly kind of have him walk me through the game, I think. He was excited to get it, but I don't think he's got it just yet. But yes, I love the fact that they're both Wizard Brothers. It makes me so happy. I've never actually played Marvel Puzzle Quest. I think I've heard of it, but it's not something that's just ever hit on my radar. I do actually play some games like I'm at work. I think I've told people before. I play Plants vs. Zombies, like the first one, and I really like it. I mean, it's like, 7 years old at this point? But I will just play that off and on. And then there's a new game that I started playing. My kids actually got me hooked on it. It's called Bike Race. It's just one of these stupid freemium games where they're just constantly trying to get you to buy things. I hate it. But you basically you play a little motorcycle rider dude, and you have these courses that you have to follow, and they get complicated. And you can actually tilt the thing and make your guy do wheelies, and it can affect how you jump. So if you go into a jump doing a wheelie, it can cause you to like get different levels of altitude, and you can do flips, which will cause you to kind of go forward. So it's sort of like a puzzle game in a way. You got to figure out how to get through each. It's not just racing. It's more like how do you manage to get through it, and then you get stars based on how fast you go. So certain levels you get one or none or up to three, and you can get a different bikes. But the thing is, that's where they get you, is it costs money to get the cool new bikes. You get other bikes that are just like your bike, but they just like different colors. They don't do anything different. If you want the cool bikes that go faster, jump farther, don't explode, you have to pay money. And I refuse to do that. I'm pretty good. Like, I just won't ever do that. I'll play the game for free. I will never give them any money. And eventually I'll get bored and move on to something else. So this is totally personal. Not like TMI personal, but just has no relation to anybody outside of me. But pretty excited. I'm proud papa here. My kid was tested recently as part of a study. We think he may have ADHD. Pretty sure he does. He was observed part of a study, and technically there's 6 factors to determine if you have ADHD. You have to have at least 3. He has 3, but they're kind of mild, so he's like borderline. But in the study, they rated him extremely high, like not like super genius, but like above average for spatial reasoning. He's really, really good at that. And he also has really high reading comprehension, which I do as well, which is one of the main reasons I got through school. So he's like in the 97th percentile in spatial reasoning and 96th percentile in reading. So we're trying to find ways to engage that part of his brain and keep him interested and excited. So we're going to start playing chess together, which is one of the things that I read about that sort of will help engage that. I already own like 12 chess boards, but I bought a new one that's his. And I told him we're going to start playing chess pretty regularly and just looking for other things that we can get him into to help foster that. Who knows if he'll even want to, but like engineers, architects, artists are people who generally have really high spatial. I have terrible spatial reasoning. I can't visualize things. I literally have to see it before I will know what it will look like. So it's going to be a challenge, but it should be fun for me as well. But yeah, he loves Legos. We've been impressed. Like, he can actually build, like, doesn't follow the instructions, but he'll just take Legos and put them together and be like, here, I built this. And we're like, that's actually pretty good. So it kind of makes sense, I guess. We just, didn't quite have it laid down the law that this is how it should be. So that's exciting for us, but it's also one more thing that we get to do, because right now Jacob is our athlete. He's into every sport. We put him into soccer. He's wanting to play baseball. He wants to play football. Who knows what he'll end up doing. And John is the video game player like me. He's a little bit heavy, just likes to watch TV, but he's really smart, loves to read. He's already devouring books, so he's definitely my kid when it comes to that. Yeah, there's a few other like after school programs that we're going to look at for John as well to get him into. But yeah, it's exciting. So also, I love chess, and I'm not very good anymore because I don't play, but I'll probably crush him for a while. So it made me feel better about myself. I'll crush the 7-year-old or 8-year-old chess until he beats me, and then I'll be even more proud because he beat me. What else is going on? Oh, if there are any Again, patrons listening now in the future, we're supposed to play Scooby-Doo Dread this Friday, but right now I've only got one player. I've got to have four. I can probably fit in one faculty and still make it work, but I need at least three players. So maybe even if you're not faculty, but you can play Friday, let me know, because I need three players at least Friday, this Friday, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Takes about 3 hours. Knowing about Scooby-Doo is a bonus. Having your own Jenga set is a must, or again, any sort of wobbly toppling tower set, but Jenga specifically is the best. All right, so we'll do one last time around the horn. Do either of you have any questions that you would like to chat with me about? Otherwise, we will wrap things up. And while I'm waiting for chat to catch up, I'll get it next time. So the goal for Wednesdays, again, every other Wednesday on alternating weeks between me and Dragon Heist, I'm going to do a live show. Hopefully in the future, we'll get back to having regular co-hosts. Have a couple lined up from the network, a couple from the faculty themselves, a couple outside the faculty, trying to make sure they all line up so that we can get on here. These shows will then be audio only, just like regular shows. And then Tuesday nights, one Tuesday a month, we're going to do a RPG that's not for the podcast. We're just going to get together and play some games. Probably we'll be talking about it, maybe even doing some articles on it, but it's not going to be for the show. One Tuesday a month, we're going to go to the game store, which I missed last night because I wasn't feeling good. And then the other Tuesdays of the month, we're going to do rotating like board game live shows like we've been doing, maybe one-shot RPGs of different systems. One of my goals this year is I want to run a bunch of new stuff. I've been buying all these different games back here, and half of them I've never ran. Bubblegum Shoe, Scum and Villainy, Blades in the Dark, which are the same thing. Monster of the Week, Atomic Robo, which is Fate, but I love the Atomic Robo version, Mouse Guard. So I'm hoping to get into some one-shots of all these various systems. And then again, if anyone's listening, join our Patreon, $1 a month. Lots of cool stuff now, free minisodes, free games that we play, all kinds of cool stuff. So yeah, so the Ours Goes to 7 is the official tagline for Catacomb 2019. Though if you've been paying attention on Facebook, who knows if it'll even be called a catacomb by the time we get around to it. Though I'm still like 80-20 that it's going to be, because I like the name. It has a lot of personal meaning to me, and I don't see a lot of value in changing it. But I'm not saying no, I'm just saying I haven't been convinced yet. But yeah, the idea is that, again, you know, it's from Spinal Tap, more or less, that this is our 7th year of a catacomb. Ours goes to 7, and then if you guys already know, our dice this year, we have 6-sided dice, can't find one, that they're pips, but ours goes 2 through 7. So there's no 1 on our dice that we're going to be giving away. It just goes 2 pips through 7. So our D6 goes to 7. So we're giving away D6s plus 1s at a catacomb. So again, if you have any sort of spells or abilities, if your damage is D6 plus 1, there you go. That's what you can have. So ours goes to 7, a con of some sort to be named in the future, probably Catacomb 2019. The Kickstarter goes live March 21st. When tickets are going to go live, so hopefully we'll be ready by then, because that's what we're trying to do. All right. Well, thank you both for hanging out with me. We've had a few other people pop in, but no one has been talking. Totally cool. No pressure. If you just want to hang out and, you know, what's the term when you just want to watch? Not stalk, that's the wrong word. Just hang out with us. No pressure to talk. Happy to have you here. And for those of you who do talk, I really appreciate it as well. So good night, and we'll see you next time.